pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I think you look good.
Welcome to the Board of Supervisors meeting, August. I'm ready. April the 19th, 2022. Is there any changes to the agenda?
I have none.
Meet with department heads and elected officials. Terry Johnson, County Auditor.
Good morning. After we got final word last Friday that all of the candidates have been set, I've just got the ballot order sent today, approved, final approval sent today to the printers, so. And when I talked to them, they came and the company that does our printing of the ballots, they came and updated our machines last week. And I asked them, I said, so how many counties do you have to print ballots for once we get the word? And he goes, only about 66 counties. So they're going to be quite busy, so anyway, at least got them ordered, so.
Good.
So we're staying busy with that. And hopefully in May, Secretary of State's Office of State will send out cards to households or voters with their new information.
Oh, and if somebody comes in and gets another card, a new person, do you send a card out or do they have to go through the state?
If it's through the voter registration, they get a regular card. But what the Secretary of State will send out is basically a notice stating, this is your precinct number and this is your location. But anybody that registers, since we've got all the streets and everything updated, are getting the most recent information. And that was probably early April, somewhere around in there. Because I know somebody made the comment that they had gotten a new card and then they needed to correct their address, which was in the same location, but that it had a different precinct number on it. And I said, yes, that's the most recent one.
Okay, thank you. Lisa Schaefer, County Attorney.
Staying busy. Chris and I are getting ready for a murder trial at the end of May, which will be about 2 weeks long. Tomorrow, we're actually closing our office for a couple of hours. Kevin's department has kindly providing us with our own run, hike, fight training so that it's geared specifically toward our office since we have a much different layout than the rest of the courthouse. So I believe it's Sergeant Hama and a couple other members of the Sheriff's Office are going to come over and kind of go run through some scenarios for us in the event we did have an active shooter or an active threat of how we need to respond given the layout of our building. So we're going to be closing from 2 to 4 so that all of our staff can actively participate in that. And so we're really looking forward to it. And I appreciate Kevin loaning us Dave for the afternoon so that he can help us with that. Our sexual assault attorney, Terry Cortucci, last week spent the week in San Antonio at a national training for investigating and prosecuting sex abuse offenses. So she came back with lots of good knowledge and things that hopefully she could start implementing in accordance with our sometimes quirky laws that we have. But other than that, I'm just staying busy, and like I said, Chris and I are getting ready for the murder trial at the end of May.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. Colin, IT?
Just keeping busy like always. We've been trying to finalize the phone system swap to the new system. We only have like a couple phones left that we need to get put in place at Big Hollow and Stars Cave. We're reporting the rest of the final half of the numbers here on Friday, but overall it's went pretty smooth. Just a couple little hiccups, but nothing too bad overall. And Next Tree Communications that we're working with has been really phenomenal working with, getting them, you know, getting everything set up and having both systems at the same time. So hopefully here next week, everyone will be on a new system and we'll start pulling out all the phones.
Okay. When you get all that done, you're going to come and teach us three guys how to operate our own phones then, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Kevin Glendenning, Sheriff.
Hi, good morning. Last week, myself and a couple of our staff attended the Iowa State Sheriff's and Deputies Association Civil School. Learned about the civil process, sheriff sales, garnishments, weapons permits, an array of different things. Very good training, pretty exciting stuff, so we're happy to bring that information back. Some good updates, just legislative changes, means changes, those kind of things. Sold a couple vehicles last week on gov deals. The flip side of not being able to get cars is when we do sell, the ones that we're getting rid of is they're selling rather high, so pretty happy with how those went. And then our jail population, we're at 71 this morning, but we had 4 in intake, so we should see that back down today. Holding strong with the same numbers, 3 juveniles and 1 adult. So, staying right in that range, high 60s, low 70s.
Thank you, Kevin. Yep. Rodney Williams, the ranger.
Good morning. You can tell the front step project kind of kicked off yesterday, so.
You tell what that is.
So, sound of progress. So. It's kind of moving along. It's going to be noisy for a couple days. One thing we did do is we did go ahead and unlock the back door coming off the alley there. So with them kind of blocking off the street, those that kind of park on the north side, instead of having to try to walk out in the street, they can walk down the alley and come through the back door. So we turned the alarm off and unlocked that. So that way people had access to either the handicap entrance on the south side of the building or on the west side back entrance there. So. Let the public kind of know that's all open. We got a few signs out and about, but sometimes you can't see those. Other than that, we're just really busy.
Okay, thanks, Roger. Thank you. Zach James, Southeast Iowa Regional Plan.
Yeah, things have been going pretty well, ladies-wise. I have a fair number of subdivisions that we still got out for review or kind of working through. Got a couple more floodplain development requests as well last week. Got a request for rezoning too. That's going to be, can't remember the day, I think it's May 3rd. We've got a planning and zoning commission meeting set up to review that, and that'll come to you guys eventually as well. So, other than that, same old.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Ben, do you have any updates for us you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. No, she did.
Oh, okay. Didn't want to miss you.
No.
Mr. Carter, Secondary Roads.
Good morning. Plenty of stuff going on. Sounds like possible concrete pouring out of GIA maybe Thursday, but that's not set yet. So there's still just some discussion. Sounds like rain Wednesday and rain Friday. So if it doesn't happen, then it'll probably be next week. Sounds like possibly the first mainline pour on Pleasant Grove Road might be Monday or Tuesday next week. So it's good to see those things moving along, I guess. Upper Flint, which you guys will have the contract coming up on the agenda here today. That contractor wants to do a pre-con yet this week. So he still has to talk to his sub though. He's hoping to get going on it right away, but that depends on his sub. So we'll just see where all that communication goes. So I don't think I have that lockdown yet, but I don't know, plenty of stuff going on with the DOT stuff going on also. There's closures and road work going every which direction. We were contacted by Mac from Minneapolis area, and I suppose like Kevin had the experience of, they canceled one of our 2 trucks we had ordered. So in the other, they're basically passing on price increases, and doesn't matter if you have a contract signed or not. If you want to pay the cost, you can keep your order, and if you don't, you can walk away. But there's not a whole lot of negotiation going on in that industry at the moment. So so that was a single axle we had ordered that they canceled. Supposedly we'll be first in line, not us, but anybody that got canceled will be first in line the next time around when they open up orders, but they don't have any clue on pricing or time frame for that. So that's not the end of the world, as long as it doesn't drag out too far. We'll be okay on that front. But so other than that, there's a ton of stuff going on and working on a lot of things that are still in the mix.
That truck been on order for what, 6 months?
Well, so in your guys' world, it been on order in 6 months, yeah. But it took 3 months just for Mac to give the salesman a spot that he could actually enter the order. That was, these are the two trucks I came to you and said we don't normally order trucks almost 2 years in advance, but we're being told that it's 12 to 15 months. You know, at that time, it wasn't probably 2 years ago, but anyway. So it took 2 to 3 months just for the salesman to actually show up and actually be able to hand his paperwork to sign, because they had told him originally we couldn't have either one. Then we got these spots, signed them sometime midwinter, I don't remember the exact dates. And then here we go. Now they're not going to produce what they had planned to produce, and what they are going to produce is $4,000 more than what it was supposed to be. This is not individual to Mac. This is happening all the way through. I mean, it's, you know, you heard about Kevin with Dodge at that time, but in the equipment industry, especially the over the road truck type stuff, it's not individual to any one company. So I'm glad we're getting one of the two, I guess. Call that a win for now. So, but just wanted to mention it.
Kevin, is that your understanding, or for if you get a vehicle canceled, you'd be toward the first of the list next year, or is that what you heard, or
it
nothing like that?
It wasn't that way for us, so we were told we had one on the lot and two on order, and then the letter we were sent was forwarded to us by the dealer, but straight from Dodge. It basically said that the two you have on order, we're not going to be able to honor that. We won't be able to honor the price, and we can't say when we'll be able to get more cars. And then there is some changes in what the state bid was, and the price went up, and I just wasn't very happy with that, so I said we're not going to buy the car. You're not honoring the price that it was, so we didn't buy the car. Not sure if that was the right move or not, but I didn't want to pay another $5,000 from what we were already said that the price was going to be, so we moved on from it, and we're going to make do with what we have, and when they open up the bid process, we'll move forward.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah. And I had the same option. I went the other way. I'm paying the $4,000 because I'm going to pay it to somebody. But I wasn't automotive either. I mean, we're in two different industries. I don't think we have two pickup trucks on order, and I don't think we would, if they cancel those, I don't think we'll have any say in anything going forward. So, and I'm sure the prices will change on that stuff too. So, but yeah, it's really, when you talk to the salesmen and stuff like that, they, you know, nobody's ever seen anything quite like this. So, but either way, that's just the way it is right at the moment. See what happens. But anyway, and I have the agenda item of the contract. I'll give you a few more details about that when we get on to that. But it's a busy season, so, which is all right.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Chris Lee, Conservation.
Good morning. I attended a webinar last week on that new Destination Iowa grant that the governor came out with, $100 million. Divided up several different ways, outdoor recreation being one of them. So it sounds like an interesting opportunity. It's going to be a 40% match, very much like the Community Attraction and Tourism, the CAT grant. So there's a lot of people on the webinar, 600-something people at one time on the webinar, so it sounds like there's a lot of interest, and it's just going to be kind of a rolling application. They're just going to continue to take applications and assess them and score them and award them as they come in until they spend all the money. And so time is going to be kind of the essence, but there's still a little bit of kinks to work out. So I've got to get to pull up the application and kind of see what they're asking for in that, and then we've got to find out what our match is going to be with these two grants that we have pending to see. And so once we kind of get all that sorted out, it's definitely something I'll be looking at going after for Big Hollow stuff. And so that kind of in parallel with the fundraising that we're doing, that'll kind of dictate what our number and what our request ends up being, and we'll go from there. So it's kind of a big thing. Other than that, just things are getting busy. Weather, I think, is going to stop being winter here sometime soon. We got a bunch of people in the barns. Dragon boats are coming back to Bay Hollow, so the first weekend in May, which is just a couple weeks away now, is going to be out there. And then it'll be after that that we try to put the mariners out. We're going to leave the beach wide open until dragon boats is over with. And then sometime after that is when we'll start getting the mariners out. We did get notice from our engineer that the final sediment sampling results have come back in. They've got the report back from that, and they didn't find anything real concerning at the bottom of the lake, which is good. I'm not sure what they're going to find down there. And so they said there's no real geochemical issues down there for the foreseeable future. So that was good. That was kind of a big question mark we had pending. And so they'll do a kind of a final report on that. And then they got their comments back from EPA, just some minor stuff they had to address in their final report. So I think they're going to get the revised report sent in this week. So hopefully we're still on track to have that thing done, final approval here, yet this spring, early summer, and keep us on track for the, I think, mid to late summer application process for the federal fund. So it seems to be moving.
Ken Hyde, Steel Region.
Good morning. Yeah, we had our steel monthly meetings last Wednesday, and one of the things we talked about was Glenwood closing. Within the next 2 years, Glenwood's going to be closing, and they have about 150 residents that'll need alternative placements in Glenwood. And so I know Ryan, the CEO of the Steel Region, has been talking with DHS, the state, and DHS would like the region to, well, all the regions in Iowa, to develop these IRSH homes that they've been legislating that we develop. But I think there's one IRSH home that's gotten started in Iowa so far, but not near us. And so we're looking into all those kinds of things, but it all takes planning and money and providers. I mean, one of the big things is there's 150 people leaving Glenwood, and the providers are short-staffed, and it's hard to find enough openings for 150 people, and they all have pretty high needs. So, so it's a big task to find where these people are going to go. So, otherwise, we did our normal monthly business, and we signed new MOUs and 2080 agreement, and three of the contracts went through. Out of about 10 contracts that need renewed, three of them have gone through so far. And we have one new contract we're gonna send through next month too. So we'll probably have 11 contracts all together this year, but we're getting started pretty well and working on it, staying busy.
Okay, thank you.
Andy?
Good morning. Just keeping busy. Unfortunately, that's not always a good thing, but I do want to take a minute and thank the department heads. They've been doing such an outstanding job. Their people's been doing an outstanding job reporting things, getting information to me. I got a couple calls over the weekend, and I know people feel uncomfortable about calling me on my cell after hours or when I'm not at work, but it makes everything so much easier. It makes my job easier. It makes sure that, you know, if an employee is injured, they're getting the care they need. So the department has been doing a wonderful job with their people, and I just want to thank them. They're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Thank you.
You never gave me the cell phone number.
I don't want calls from you.
I guess you're just not worried about it.
Actually, I got your name listed in my phone.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
You don't know what place to send it.
Talk about that later.
Chris Bogenauer, Public Health.
Good morning. We continue to be busy at Public Health. We're giving, so the COVID vaccine, we're giving the boosters, we're giving the initial doses, the vaccination series. Also, a few months back, we had received notification from the state that they wanted us to sign a new 2080 agreement, which was for our environmental health services. We're contracted from the state to provide those services. That's our well permitting, well testing, septic permits. And so our subcontract is Russ, and so we've got a subcontract with them, but we need to re-sign that contract with the state. One of the stipulations was that the Chapter 38, they felt like they wanted that to be readopted by the county because they didn't feel like it was fully adopted. So we did that a couple weeks ago. The board signed off on that. And so we're at the point where we could sign that 28E agreement and asking maybe if we could do a work session and bring in the county attorney. I talked to Trent at the county attorney's office, and he said he was comfortable with signing that, but I think maybe bringing in Bruce Hudson from Russ as well as Trent and doing a work session may be a good idea for the board to be able to ask any questions they have regarding the agreement.
I agree. Okay, thanks for that.
Why don't maybe touch base with Terry and find out a date that works for Trent and Bruce, and let Terry get available for a work session.
Okay. Did I miss anybody? Nobody I missed. Correspondence? Have you gentlemen got any correspondence?
I do not.
Moving on to discussion and vote. We have a Book of Kelp Building project approval of the architect's proposal. Well, thank you, Dan, for looking at this. Use the guy that's kind of lean on commission. Okay to use.
Yeah. I just had a couple questions, and I appreciate you being here, Dan. I'm familiar with construction, but I'm not overly familiar with architectural engineering contracts. So I just had a couple of questions. Is the scope of work what we typically find in that contract? Is it what we're looking for or required, provided in this agreement?
I would say yes. So they're providing programming, initial programming upfront, where they're going to sit down with your department, with the public health department, talk to them about what their needs are, what their current spaces are, try to figure out what the total space should be for the program, today's program, and looking into the future. And then they go into, once that's approved, once everybody's on board with where the program is, which is really just space allocation, figuring out how much space you need. Then they'll go into the design phase, and they've got it split into three components there: schematic, design development, and then the construction documents, which is what we would normally see. And then their participation in the bidding phase will be very minimal, and you can see that by the way that they distribute their fee in their fee structure. And then they have construction administrative services, which basically what that will be is that during the construction process, if there are issues, requests for information, if there are issues with the drawings that need to be resolved, they'll do that. If the county decides we want to add something to the project, then that would come under that construction administration side. It, to a limited degree, if you decide, hey, we want to double the building, then obviously, you know, they're going to probably want more than just what is in their current fee. But just general small things, that will come up during the construction process. So those all are included in their fee. Their fee was split into a couple different pieces. One was for the phase one, the program validation and capability determination. That was an hourly fee not to exceed a certain amount, $20,000, I believe. And then the fee for the rest of their services, they've given a range. And the reason they've given a range at this point in time, they just don't know how big the project is, whether it's going to be 5,000 square feet, 10,000 square feet. That's a kind of significant price difference really in the overall cost of the project. So at the point where we can nail down the program, then I think they can nail down their fee and be able to get to a set fee for that.
So sounds like what they're proposing is what we need from an architect, engineer, and if they're proposal, it's the terms are typical and,
yep,
and acceptable.
Yes. And so under their agreement, they will carry all of the sub-consultants. They'll have the civil engineer, they'll have the mechanical, electrical engineer, the structural engineer. All of those will be under their contract. What they don't have is landscape design, which is very typical. Typically, that's a separate service. You might hire somebody else to do the landscape architecture work, if there will be any.
That's good. Any other question?
Good.
I make a motion that we accept the architect engineer's proposal.
Second.
Terry.
Tom Parker?
Yes.
Shane Campbell?
Yep.
Jim Carrey?
Yes.
Thank you, Dan.
I need to leave. I have another.
No. That's why.
Thank you.
That's why we put you at the beginning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Zach.
Yep. Yep.
Approval of the contract for the upper splint, concrete, cement, paving. The LFM-P114BCC22-7229.
So this is the upper Flint paving project. I don't think there's anything new here to hit or anything like that. I just was going to give you a little more information on the bids and a little perspective, I guess. So the low bid was Jones Contracting at $789,672.96. So we saved a little bit of money. We're trying a new product for our dowel basket material, I guess is what I'm going to call it. The rebar that goes between the joints would be the layman's way of putting it. We're not using steel, we're using a fiberglass product. Not a big savings, but it was, I want to say $6,000-$7,000 or something like that. It might be a bit higher. I don't remember the exact difference. So, but anyway, we're trying a little bit different product there. This is an interesting one and a good comparison one for us because we did the other portion of this road 2 years ago. And this is the same contractor. It will be the same concrete supplier. They do have a different subcontractor, but it's still a competitive bid market, so it doesn't really matter what their subcontractor is. So to give you an idea, you can't compare them apples to apples because they're different lengths of projects, but when you convert everything to kind of a per mile comparison, this project's about 66% more than what we did 2 years ago. Hmm. So, I don't think I'm shocked at the fact it's more. I don't think I was shocked. I think we hit this pretty close in our estimating, actually, as far as budget goes.
One question. How much did they leave on the table last time? If I was bidding something, the same job, I would look at the last time I bid it and I said I was 20% low or 10% low. I would adjust my price a little bit.
That's a good question. I don't remember those bids. They did leave a little bit on the table, but
you might want to check that next time you get close to that number.
Yeah, I can check that. The good thing about this one was that I wasn't real concerned on that specific one because the DOT's contractor, who they were competing against last time, which would have been Strep back then, the current one, Flynn, was a plan holder. In fact, had called and asked us questions, and we actually thought we would get a bid from them. Mm-hmm. However, I believe they picked up a pretty large project up in the Des Moines area, and I suspect that that's why they did not chase this one, because they need to commit resources in two different spots now. So, we got the perception of competition. We did have two bidders. I would mention that. The Iowa Civil Contracting was the second bidder. They have historically, when they've bid in our county, been a little higher on our projects. They came in at $894.
Where are they from?
I want to say, I don't think it's Fairfield, but over in that general direction. We've never worked with them. I mean, like I said, they've done some work around here. They've never picked up an actual paving project on any of our stuff. So I don't know a whole lot about them, but we did have two bidders, I guess is what I would mention. So anyway, just kind of gives you a little glimpse as to where things are at right at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I would say I thought it was interesting that the kind of the, so when you bid a project, you don't bid it like if you and I go do a project at home and you're going to pour a patio, you're going to pay ideal for X amount of cubic yards of concrete. And that's not the way construction goes. The price of the concrete includes all the labor to put that concrete on the ground. It's actually bid by the square yard. So the contractor has a fixed amount. That rebar that goes in it, that's in there. The labor, that's in there. The paver, that's all in there. So it's all in a different price. But I would mention that the price per square yard on this was actually very similar to the price per square yard on the concrete that we used when the Beaverdale project got done. That little, kind of a smaller paving project, I would call it. But that's probably been five-ish years ago, something like that. So even though it is a whole lot more than it was 2 years ago, I think it kind of shows also how competitive things were the last couple of years. It's not just inflation that number's up, because so I guess what I'd say is I feel like they were still competitive. They were still worried about another bidder, which would be Flynn, because they have their own concrete plant. So otherwise I suspect that number would be higher. Anyway, I would recommend approval, and sounds like obviously it'd be frustrating for some folks that are out in that area, but they very well may start this sooner or later, which will extend that upper flank closure through this project. So, but when I know more about that, I'll let you know, maybe even by next week. So
I move to approve contract.
Second.
Terry.
Shane Campbell.
Yes.
Tom Broker.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Thank you.
The new concrete all the way to 61.
All the way to, from the new concrete on the west end to the new concrete on the east end. So basically to 61, but not quite.
Gotcha.
Across that bridge.
Approval of accounts payable claim in the amount of
$87,266.78.
Motion to approve. Second. Terry. Tom Broker. Yes. Shane Campbell. Yes. Jim Carrey. Yes. $422 reimbursements and $419. Reimbursement reading of $361.52.
Move to approve.
Second.
Terry.
Shane Campbell.
Yes.
Tom Broker.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Compensation board member request for appointment. That letter here says, Des Moines County Supervisors, I'm interested in serving a 4-year term on the Des Moines County Compensation Board as a representative to the county treasurer. If approved, the term will expire on July 2026. Thank you, Jeff Heelan, 2909 Dill Street, Burlington, Iowa.
Move to approve.
Second.
Terry.
Shane McCampbell.
Yes.
Tom Broker.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Yes.
So that means we've got three other seats to fill?
Yes. Remember, you guys have one that you need to discuss.
We got a sweet talk, Danny Cahill.
Yeah.
That's Tom. That's your job.
That's one of the high points of the year. see if you can embarrass Kevin again.
He does his best.
Well, we have an application for electric license for Flint Hill Municipal Golf Course. I think everything's okay. Are you okay with this?
All good out there, yeah.
All good.
No issues.
Vote to approve.
Second.
Terry.
Shane McCampbell.
Yes.
Tom Brokaw.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Better be you don't change all three. Okay, now we have personnel action. We have two for the sheriff, which will do a little sheriff and correctional officers. Do you want to do them separate or all four at once?
Do the sheriffs and then you'll do the correctional officers.
Okay. That's why we got her back here to keep me straight. The first one for the sheriff's office is Jeanette Marie Vansock, new hire, 74.77 hours a week. The rate is $47,107.10. And the second one is for Kenneth Roger Peterson, the fourth, resignation. Effective date 5/12/2022.
If I may, Ken Peterson, he's been a deputy with us for several years. He's gonna be leaving. He's pursuing a career in insurance. It's been something he's been after for the last several months.
He's leaving for insurance?
He's leaving for insurance. Yep, he's gonna become an agent here locally. And we wish him all the best. He's gonna stay on as a reserve deputy, so we're glad to keep him. He'll fall well into that. He's ready to go. Obviously, he's been a full-time deputy for us. But we're on the flip side, we're hiring Lynette Vanscoy. She comes to us as a teacher from West Burlington. We're excited to have her on as a deputy, and she's going to be starting the academy May 3rd. So she'll be at the academy for 16 weeks and come back and finish up her 4 months of field training, and we'll get her out there and be back up to full staff.
Motion to approve.
Second. Terry.
Tom Brokaw.
Yes.
Shane Campbell.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. And we have two of them for the correctional center. First one is for James Pleasant, or is that Pleasant James?
James Pleasant.
James Pleasant, okay.
He is quite pleasant.
And that's for 8.25 hours unpaid on 4/23/22. And the second one is for Elizabeth.
I didn't see this one.
Grobstitch.
Grobstitch.
Grobstitch. How do you pronounce that?
I think you nailed it.
Okay. And that's an anniversary for 6 month step increase for previous rate was $39,867.37. The new rate is $40,895.52.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Terry.
Shane McCampbell.
Yes.
Tom Brokaw.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Okay. Now we have reports. We have the Dewey Buyer Trust on file there. This will be in the auditor's office for your viewing at your discretion. And now we have the minutes for the regular meeting on April the 12th. 2022.
Move to approve.
Second.
Terry.
Shane Campbell.
Yes.
Tom Brokaw.
Yes.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Is there any other business?
I have none. I have none.
Future agenda items. You're going to get to Terry and you're going to
yes, and I'll see what works for Trent and Bruce as well, and then I'll talk to Matt Shivers as well, the Board of Health Chair, and see if he's available to come to that as well, because it's signed by both the Board of Health and the Board of Supervisors. So.
I think Maine would be given Trent's thing, because Bruce, you'll be ready.
Yes, he said he would be very flexible with his time, so, yeah, thank you.
Committee reports.
I attended a Greater Brewing Partnership meeting this morning. We had a presentation on the Des Moines County labor market. And it was similar to that governor had a labor market roundtable a couple weeks ago. Actually, it was the same Congress that presented it. And I attended the meeting of the Southeast Iowa Mental Health and Disability Services Region's Governance Board, and we approved claims, contracts, and new 2080 agreements. And like Ken said, there's two state resource centers, Wynnewood and Woodward. That's where the most difficult to serve clients are. So when Ken said these are hard, a lot of providers aren't equipped to handle these particular individuals and the problems they have. So, and quite honestly, the reimbursement rates that the state provides, the reason there aren't any intensive rehabilitation service homes. So something we'll have to give, but anyway, that's my two cents. That's all I've got.
I've got all my meetings today, so.
I attended the Russ meeting, and that, I guess, covered that pretty much what went on there, that 2080 agreement. The only other thing, we're they've got that pump truck, you know, and pump our own lagoons and that, and we're talking about hiring him to go to workforce and get his license for that. And a lot of calls come in, we talked to somebody on the ground that does that, and they said they could really use some help, so that's what you're talking about doing that. And then I had a Zoom meeting with the Southeast Iowa Regional Planning. Just to show we're just okay with the stuff we're doing. And that's all I had.
Public input.
Anybody from the public?
We'll give you 2 minutes. You email board at dmcounty.com, that's board at dmcounty.com, or call 319-753-8203, extension 4, and we'll give you 2 minutes to do that. Is there anybody in here that's got any public comments?
You know, we haven't gotten an official letter from DHS yet on that, but Ryan said she expects something to come.
Department of Justice
has, filed something against them for, and we speculate that has something to do with that. They were supposed to do corrective action and everything, and I don't know all the details, but we wonder if that's something.
I don't know if it's just a budget cut or.
So is there any thought or hope that apparently there's some legislation that they're hopeful is going to move out and get approved to increase the Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates from like $400 up to about $100? Are we going to find more providers? Is GRMC going to put me where? What's your thoughts on that? Is that going to?
That would really help if Medicaid rates would be increased. That's really needed. I mean, you hear a lot of providers. Some providers have gone out of business just not being able to sustain services, and many providers to get workers have had to increase their wages by $3 an hour, and the region has paid some of that for some of our services, but a vast array of the services are funded by Medicaid. So it's time where Medicaid needs to increase their rates so that they can find enough workers to do the jobs.
I think the theory is that if you fund it, then there'll be providers, so hopefully we'll see that.
Yeah, I hope so.
In the 1990s, the Supreme Court, I believe, was called the Homestead Decision. said you can't warehouse people, that they need to be in community settings. So the problem with that is there's a small percentage of people that are pretty tough to put in community settings, that really tough to put in community settings. These are people that burn their bridges everywhere, and most providers don't want them even if they could handle them. And it's a really, 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 really tough population to do anything.
Even with the MHIs, I don't think the goal is for them to be there permanently. It's to get them as stabilized as you possibly can, and some people need some more long-term care. They need locked facilities, and they need staff that are there prepared to handle those difficult patients. But my concern is, even when we increase the rates, that they still have the ability to reject the very difficult patients. And we have this bed tracking, and we can find open beds, but that's not really true, because they can still say, we're not going to accept that patient. So then you're stuck with a patient that has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And when they have that ability, I mean, when you have that level of necessary care, then to me, the state has to be involved to help provide it, because the private care providers don't want to do it. They just don't want to be in that game. But maybe this rate reimbursement will encourage people that there's profit there, and they'll move towards it.
We know the goals. Otherwise, they're going to end up with you and everybody else in your profession.
Where what we're providing them is very limited. I mean, we do our best to still have them leave better from our care than when they came in. But they need that permanent care.
And the state is pushing for IRSH homes to get started, which have a rule of no eject, no reject, so that you can't just take a person and then leave them off at the hospital and not take them back, that you have to continue to serve them until you find other alternate placement that's more appropriate for the community. So
I kind of felt that way with the access centers a couple of years ago, though, and then it felt like they're just invented terms like tertiary care, and it felt that way to me, like the access centers were the answer, but then they were getting rejected from the access center.
There's still, yeah, you still have to meet that level of care need. And if you don't meet that, then you can go back out into a lower level of care. Yeah, it is. It's very hard to. I agree with you that we need safety nets for people, you know, which the institutions used to be, our county homes used to be a safety net. Those are no longer there. But there needs to be some safety nets for when people really need a lot of services. And then you try and move them back out into the community as soon as you can, but we don't want to get rid of all the safety nets.
Ken, what did you say those homes are called?
IRSH.
Woodward, oh, IRSH, yeah.
IRSH.
Intensive Rehabilitation.
Oops.
Hold on here. Extensive?
Intensive.
Intensive.
Intensive. Rehabilitation Service Homes.
Thank you, Tom. I was struggling to remember that one. But it's one of the new, in the new legislation, we need to create these, so many of them in Iowa. We don't have to have one in every region, but there need to be so many in Iowa. And we need to contract with them. Our region needs to contract with some IRSH home in order to meet the legislation. So.
Okay, our 2 minutes is up. 5 minutes ago. So. Listen, I were out of here.